Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast. There's a lot of words Japan here. How have I never noticed this? Have I said it right?
Oh,
is it? Do we say Japan this many times?
Analyse his intro, he's done a million times. He sometimes gets like this, it's great, and it usually coincides with him drinking loads of coffee, which is exactly what he's doing now. He's back on the cold brew sauce, guys. He's in big trouble. He's in all kinds of trouble. He's in the middle of a big render. Are you rendering, Chris? Are you rendering out your videos?
I'm rendering my videos. It's taken 30 minutes, but we're rendered. It's a podcast, isn't it? And it's Pete Donaldson.
Yay!
How you doing, Pete? What's going on?
Not a lot, really. I'm just...
I'm anticlimactic.
Every time you ask me, I'm just like... I am... Because we normally record in the morning, I've not had any...
Done anything.
...issues. You know what I mean? If you record in the evening, I've had a day of issues. But if in the morning, my slate is clean, my life is happy, the birds are singing and the sun is shining, and it's just bloody great stuff. I drove up to Blackpool at the weekend, Chris. I was in Liverpool for Eurovision. Certainly the Friday anyway, for a wrestling show called Effie's Big Gay Brunch, which is a gay wrestler called Effie, who works for a few companies out in America, and he's kind of set up this kind of semi-regular annual sort of biannual wrestling show called Effie's Big Gay Brunch, and it's basically just either gay LGBTQ plus performers or allies. I think I've spoken about it before, but he did one in England for the first time, and he brought on a guy called Kendo Nagasaki. Now, I'm not expecting you to remember who he is, Chris, because you're a fair whack younger than me, and I shouldn't really know who he is. But in the 80s, wrestling was really, really big. Well, 60s, 70s, 80s, wrestling was really big on British terrestrial television. You know, millions of viewers every single Saturday afternoon on a TV show called World of Sport. And our grands would have been quite into it. Grands and granddads, really, that generation, that post-war kind, well, sorry, that wartime generation, really bloody loved wrestling, professional wrestling. And Kendo Nagasaki was one of the big sort of three or four wrestlers in the UK. He was up there with Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks and people like that. So he was this kind of like, he had a weird sort of, I think maybe like a ninja or a kendo, some kind of karate mask thing that he used to wear. He's worth a Google. He's an interesting mask sort of configuration. And he would come on and he'd do like flips and kicks and stuff. And he was like a kind of karate guy. But he was a white British bloke who was actually openly gay, which is one of the few openly gay wrestlers, you know, ever really in that generation. And so he came out at Effie's Big Gay Brunch, and he's 85, Chris. He's 85, so it was like my mate Mark, who knows about wrestling. The conceit of Wrestle Me, the podcast, is that my mate knows loads about wrestling, and about 4 or 5 years ago, we started watching all of the WrestleManias from start to finish. So now I'm a big wrestling fan, by virtue of the fact we just did a podcast about it every week. So now, like, I will, you know, I'll seek out wrestling now. But yeah, it was just really nice to sort of see this kind of legendary British wrestler from back in the day looking exactly as he did before, because he's completely masked. He wears gloves, so you can't really tell how old he is. So he gets in the ring, has a bit of a wave, and then just kind of walks off. It was absolutely adorable.
I was picturing Japanese looking man, and he's very much a white guy,
but he influenced Japanese performers who wrestled in the UK and Europe in the 1970s and 80s, who actually went back to Japan and called themselves Kendo Nagasaki. So, which is, you know, Nagasaki's obviously, I mean, it's a city that people know for one reason and one reason alone, one would suggest. But it's just really funny that he influenced all of these Japanese performers to be called Kendo Nagasaki. So, yeah, good time was had by all. And then we moved on to Blackpool for a night. And good fucking Christ. Have you ever been to Blackpool, Chris?
No, I do not want to go to Blackpool. I've seen enough terrible things there.
I was completely unaware as to how that city operated. For a night out, it is absolutely frightening.
Really? How so?
It's just a lot of, like, 50-year-old men running around shouting. Just punching.
Oh, my God.
It's good stuff. Look, I'm from Hartlepool. I live in Southend. It's funny. I get it. But good God, it was like Southend, Hartlepool, you know, Newcastle, entertainment district. It was the big market. It was like that turned up to a million. It was absolutely incredible and just a little bit frightening, even for me, who loves that sort of place.
Yeah, well, I should take Natsuki down there, or up there, rather, and be like, this is a British coastal town, Natsuki. The place that time forgot. But no, I don't really want to go near Blackpool. And I've never seen anything that's remotely positive about it, unfortunately.
Right.
It's a shame. But did you go and see the Eurovision Song Contest? Or
no. It was just the whole city. We were actually there the night before the actual main event, but the whole city was just absolutely taken over by everyone doing Eurovision and stuff. It was very it was a lot of fun. Quite middle class.
I don't really follow Eurovision. No. Obviously, one thing, given that living the other side of the world, it's not really something you typically
really
think of. But this year, didn't they let anyone around the world vote for the Eurovision Song Contest? My friends here in Japan, they were voting for certain people.
I don't know.
Any country in the world now, you can vote for it, even if it's not in the, you know, not in Europe.
I didn't actually know that. So there's a. I mean, I don't really know how it works. I thought it was like judging. I thought you could. Is there a bit of a weighting towards like the public vote? I thought it was all like you'd sort of go around the you know Europe and Australia and go nil pois, all that business.
What? I know it costs about £2 to vote, so certainly seems pretty lucrative this Eurovision Song Contest. Sweden won, right?
I think they did. Yeah. Not a clue. Not a clue.
Well done, Sweden. Well done. Well, we got a story this week from Matt, who says, "Dear Crapulous Chris and Plastered Pete, I'm Matt from London. I have a job, which leads me to Tokyo on business 3 to 4 times a year. On our first trip back post-COVID in January 2023, I'd asked a client of ours if he could recommend an izakaya in Shibuya. He duly recommended an old haunt of his near the famous crossing, which he described as cheap but good. A good combination. When we arrived, we were beckoned into a smoke-filled restaurant and handed an English menu with a smile. After scanning the menu, I could tell that at least 50% of what my client had told me was true. It was indeed very cheap. The various grilled and skewered items made its way to our table in typically punctual fashion, and we were grateful for the wonderful service. Expeditious service. Is that even a word? Expeditious?
Expeditious
service.
Expedited?
expedited service. However, we did notice there was a distinct lack of fried chicken action going on in the kitchen. We politely inquired as the potential ETA and were met by some smiles, so assumed all was in order. All of a sudden, a very small, very out of breath older lady came limping into the restaurant. She was carrying 5 brown paper bags with KFC logos on. She put them down on the counter and pushed them in the direction of the chef. We couldn't quite believe our eyes, but to our astonishment, the chef put his hand in the bag, picked out multiple pieces of fried chicken. He plated them up and brought them to our table. For a few minutes, neither of us could process what was happening. Perhaps there was another restaurant or stall over the road which did the fried chicken, and the bags were simply the best vessel in which to transport the goods. But we took a bite, and it was just KFC, unmistakably Kentucky Fried Chicken. Where it began to get even more surreal is that from what I could find on Google, it was a negative arbitrage. According to Google, what does that mean? According to Google, original recipe chicken Super Saver Pack, 4 pieces, is 1,390 yen. And they were making a substantial loss on this transaction. Wait, what? They were buying the chicken from KFC?
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, so they weren't even cooking the food. They brought in KFC and they were losing money on the deal. Fantastic.
This is insane. Matt continues or ends with, have you ever had a situation in Japan where locals have sacrificed themselves in some way in order to prevent you from suffering a minor inconvenience? Best wishes, Matt. I mean, what had happened here is, for whatever reason, they'd probably run out of chicken.
Right.
And they went, oh, fuck, let's just go and get it over the road. Yeah. I was at a British pub yesterday and I wanted bangers and mash because it's pretty good, this place. It's also in Shibuya. And I ordered it. They took my money. And then 20 seconds later, a chef came out with a smirk on his face, turned to the waiter and went, no sausages.
Oh, no. Just mash for you then.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, no sausages. Now, in that situation, in this situation, what would they have done? They would have gone to, I don't know where you can get sausages in Japan easily, but no. What I would have liked to have happened is for the chef to run out the pub, go down the street, and find a means of which to buy and acquire sausages for my bangers and mash.
You'd have to ask a dog or something. I don't know how you would. I don't know how you would get hold of some sausages at short notice. You would need someone who could sniff them out, I think.
Yeah, imagine if a dog just came charging out the kitchen. Yeah. Roar, just down the elevator and off into the streets of Shibuya. Probably would have brought back several rats, given that's what Shibuya's known for. I do want to find this place, though. This sounds amazing. This sounds great. He didn't say what it was called, though. He just said an old haunt. Cheap but good. Matt, if you know the name of this place, please divulge the secret restaurant with us. It certainly sounds intriguing, and the fact that it was in January this year suggests that it's still open, in theory, unless they're making continued losses bringing in KFC for their cheap menu. We got a story this week about tattoos, a topic we banned from the Abroad Japan podcast about a year ago because every question was about tattoos.
Yeah,
but now I feel we can have an annual topic
annual
where we
one,
talk about tattoos.
One story about tattoos, and that's it. Well,
and that is this story.
Well, Chris, you're familiar with, you're always talking about Japan's House of Councillors Committee on Foreign Affairs and Defence. You always talk about those guys, always busy talking about those guys. But on Tuesday, a meeting was held with the Foreign Affairs and Defence guys, and one of the subjects they talked about, probably top of the bill, tattoos. Japanese society, obviously, taking a dim view on tattoos over the years because of their historical association with the Yakuza. But the Liberal Democratic Party member, Masahisa Sato, basically, who used to be in the Japan's self-defense forces and one of the 5 directors of the committee, said that they could probably soften their stance against tattoos. If you are applying for the SDF you've got a tattoo, you have your application just torn up. They cannot accept people with tattoos. 2 problems with that issue, with that policy, though. Low birth rate means that the population is shrinking, leaving fewer and fewer people able to apply, and also be who are in the right age range. And then if you're cutting people out of the application process if they've got tattoos, again,
missing some good people.
Yeah, well, you're missing some good people, and yeah, exactly, and you know, rejecting applicants for having tattoos presents a problem in terms of bolstering our number of enlisted personnel, says that chap. And also, there's an increasing number of people in Japan who just like fashion tattoos. You know, these aren't, you know, big back monstrosities that the Yakuza would get involved. But you know, some people just have a little flower or someone's name on them.
Or a dolphin in Ryotaro's case.
Yes, exactly. So
or a dolphin.
That he has to cover up, so that he formally so they basically decided to formally reevaluate the no tattoo policy for SDF applicants with the possibility of removing it if it's no longer deemed necessary. Knowing how Japanese organisations deal with stuff, we'll probably see a change somewhere in 2028. So there we go.
Yes, it's ridiculous. Like I was with a friend yesterday. And she goes to a fitness chain, one of the biggest fitness chains in Japan, Anytime Fitness. I think they're a global company, right?
Yeah.
And she was there, and on the promo campaign on the TVs around Anytime Fitness, they're running the ad for Anytime Fitness around the world. And everyone's wearing tattoos. They've all got, like, tattoos on there proudly. And then a member of staff came up to her and was like, "See my sin. I can see a tiny bit of your tattoo protruding from your shirt. Please cover it, kudasai." And it's just like, oh my god, this hypocrisy of it, right? You think Anytime Fitness would let it go? You think they'd let it slip? But
it's all about, I mean, you're literally working out, anything could pop out. We've all worn poorly constructed shorts at the old Deasy gym, haven't
yourself.
We?
Speak for yourself. But I mean, yeah, it's very silly.
Yeah.
It's very silly. And I think, you know, they could be missing out on some good people. Because typically you do associate service folks with tattoos, in what I do, for whatever reason. But like, and so, yeah, they could be missing out on some bloody good people for the self-defense force. I think if someone's being sent into battle, whether they've got a tattoo on their arm should be the last thing anyone has to worry about, you know.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's annoying that this is still a fucking conversation that's happening after all this time. Like, get rid of it. Like, it's one of the things that needs to be dealt with.
We've stopped about it on this show.
Yeah, we've stopped talking about it, but the problem's still there in Japan. You can't go to the gym with tattoos.
Yeah.
You can't work as an ALT with your tattoos physically exposed. You can't be in the army. Just get over it. The world has moved on. Most people, I think, I read a statistic. I think it was like 40% of the population of the UK or America has tattoos now. It might be higher than that. So the day might come where to not have a tattoo is to be in the minority. And it's a minority I still will remain in until I find a design that I think suits me. Still, I've got to work that one out. Any ideas?
Neck tattoo swallows. Classic. Classic.
Why not? Why not? We'll be back in just a moment, guys. Your stories, comments and questions in the fax machine.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
We've got a message from the wonderfully named Hunky from Singapore. Dear Perfect Precious Peter and Cheap Common Chris, I am Hunky from Singapore, which sounds like a personal ad. And my question is not about Japan, but rather how the two of you started this podcast. From listening to your archives, both of you met for the first time ever during the filming of Natsuki the movie in 2017, and then a podcast magically appeared in February of 2018. My question to both of you gentlemen is the process of creating my favourite podcast, basically how and why it happened. Well, I guess, Hunky, you've kind of answered your own question a little bit. That's exactly how it happened. Chris and Natsuki were in town filming Journey. No, it was Natsuki the movie, wasn't it, in 2017?
Natsuki the movie, yeah.
And I was working in a radio station in town. I said, hey guys, coming in for a chat. And we had a chat, didn't we? And it was
there good. There was a... It was a weird degree of fate and luck involved in it, though, because the day Pete emailed us being like, come to this radio, I checked my emails and we were in London at that moment, about three blocks away from Pete's radio station. Every other day, we were in Paris, Brighton or Stonehenge.
Yeah.
So the perfect day, perfect time, very lucky. And it was fun.
Something changed. It's like the pop song.
The
something changed. If we hadn't been in the same place, we wouldn't have been doing this. We wouldn't have been tied together for this length of time.
And then I was like, if you come to Japan, let me know. And I'll show you around North Japan.
Yeah.
And Pete went, I'm coming to Japan.
Okay, Japan.
Now.
Take me to this fox place. Drive me to this fox place. With the foxes.
We did go around North Japan. We had a little road trip. It was really fun, actually.
Nice,
and Pete got on the radio. We ate and drank. And
I forgot about that.
It was a good time.
Brilliant.
Good times.
Good times
we had. And it was at that moment Pete was like, you should do a podcast. And I was like, I don't know what a podcast is or where to find it.
Still
he was
don't.
Like, podcast!
Still don't, the way you honestly. Carry on, Sunshine.
And, I guess a lot of people still don't know how to find podcasts. Like,
yeah, it's it is hard to it's hard to launch them, to be honest. I'm started a video game podcast called VGC, a video game podcast, and I'm loving it. But it's just really hard to get in people's ears because, like, you know, if you're into video games, you watch and listen to certain media. That's what I'm working on at the moment. But it's getting increasingly harder to get stuff in people's ears. Really, there's no algorithm that serves new podcast episodes like YouTube. You can't kind of like lean into any subjects over any others, so it's still quite old school, really, in many ways.
Well, I feel like the way going forward is to do podcasts where there is a YouTube component, and that is historically where most podcasts the last 4 or 5 years get most of their traffic from, I think. Apart from like the big dogs, you know, your big super mega big podcast, but you know, a lot of YouTube creators turn to doing that on YouTube, and YouTube's a pretty good platform to do it. But we don't do that because we're too cool for YouTube on the Raw in Japan podcast, and I don't know how it'd work either, given that we don't. While we do record the podcast, like visually, physically, there are videos. It's just like not that good to look at. And I'd never felt like I'd want to release that, really. I don't know.
Well, I mean, nobody needs to see me at 8 o'clock in the morning.
No. Puts you on. But there you go, Hunky. There's the story of the Genesis. And so Pete and I, we hung out in like September 2017, I think. And then I went back to Christmas. I went back to the UK for Christmas, and we met up and we kicked off there in 2018. The rest is history. We've got one here from Matt Brennan. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. My question is, I was considering hiring a private tour guide for the first day in each city. Have either of you ever used a private tour guide? Know anyone who has, or have any opinions about the idea? Cheers, Matt Brennan." I mean, there are lots of good tour guide companies. I can't remember. There's like Inside Japan Tours. There's Magical Trip, which sounds like a drug. There's all sorts.
Wasn't there a... who was that absolute slob of a politician who...
Boris Johnson?
One of Boris Johnson's lads. I think he...
Oh, right. He got doesn't narrow it down.
He's constantly being exposed as someone who might be just a bit too merry for the House of Commons. I can't remember his name now. He's sort of like a flobby bloke. Oh, he's flobby flob man. Anyway, I think he used to run a Japanese tour.
He used to do a podcast about politicians.
Flobby flob man.
Explains the politicians of the UK.
I'm just terrible at remembering names. And, the problem with...
how does this tie into a private tour of Japan?
Because
this
he used to run a tour company for Japan.
Did he?
Yeah, I think he lived there for a bit and he decided that he's going to do a muggy little tour company.
Oh.
Flobby. Wow. You know, Flobby Man. I don't know why I can't remember his name. He was fucking... Michael Gove. I believe Michael Gove.
Michael Gove.
I think he did. Let me double check.
He definitely didn't. You've made that up.
Japan.
Well, there you go, Matt. Michael Gove's tours of Japan. I couldn't imagine a worse thing. Pete Donaldson's definitely made this up. This is a dream you had last night, Pete.
Who's the guy who's the head of the health minister? What was that? Who's the old health minister?
Jeremy Hunt. Yeah, he lived in Japan for a bit.
Jeremy Hunt was doing it. It wasn't Flobby Flob Flob. It was Jeremy Shitbags.
It gets better.
There we go.
I remember. Do you remember when Jeremy Hunt went to China and spoke to like the most powerful men in China? And there's a clip of him being like, "Yeah, my wife's... I love China because my wife's Japanese."
That's right, yes.
There was two massive mistakes there. Number one, don't say that. And number two, his wife's Chinese, for God's sake.
You could draw a parallel about having a love for, you know, that part of the world. But you've got to do it right. No. You've got to say it right.
It was awkward. But yeah, no, he lived here for a bit and he knows a bit of Japanese and I watched him do a speech. I think he came to Japan and did a speech. That was impressive. His Japanese needs a bit of sharpening up a bit, but and his policies on economics. But there you go, Matt. Absolutely no valuable advice there, but there are tours out there and I would say potentially do it. Because for some places like Golden Guy or certain drinking establishments, it's nice to have a private tour guide who can get you in places or book places for you that might be a little bit difficult or intimidating to do, particularly if you don't speak Japanese. Although depending on when you're staying, where you're staying for your hotel, your hotels can also book places for you as well. So consider that as well. They can book for you or maybe give you recommendations. We got one here from Diana in the USA. It says, "Hi, Cupid, Chris and Pleasant Pete. What is the best cell phone carrier to have in Japan? Do you recommend a carrier that has good coverage in Japan, North America / Europe, please? And thank you, Diana. The best carrier for coverage is NTT Docomo. Lots of people have SoftBank and they spend their time walking around trying to get coverage. Literally in a bar 3 days ago, and me and my two friends had Docomo. 5 bars, no problem. Other friend had SoftBank, no signal whatsoever, even though it was Nebisu, which is like the middle of Tokyo.
Yeah.
And that's a recurring theme I found with SoftBank. I think they're slightly cheaper, but what's the point if you can't watch a Braun Japan in your favourite bar or Warren Mountain Range? Yeah, Docomo is the one to go for. Not the cheapest, but they do have the best coverage by far.
Is Docomo the one that's got the little mascot, the little fluffy mascot?
The dog.
Is it a dog? Oh,
the
right.
Fluffy mascot. Well, SoftBank's the dog. If they've got a fluffy mascot, that's the first I've heard of it.
Okay.
I don't know what the mascot is for Docomo, actually. SoftBank are a lot better at branding.
Oh, yes, I think SoftBank's got a dog, and it's like, is he like a train driver or something? A train inspector? I don't know. He's always got a hat on.
What is this? I don't know anything about this. A trained inspector dog.
A trained inspector dog, you know.
No comment. But they're also the ones that created Pepper the robot. Remember Pepper?
Yes.
Massively useless robot on wheels that goes around. And every time you walk in a SoftBank branch or certain restaurants, it'll come over and be like, blah, 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 blah. And you try and interact with it, and it'll just sort of turn around and drive off. And I don't know why they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on that damn robot. Thing, yeah. I was in a... I had like a bit of a Blade Runner moment the other day, though. I was coming out of Tokyo Station, and in Tokyo and most Japanese cities, there's like a cavernous underground system where you can just walk around shops underground for eternity, getting lost. And I don't know where I was. I was walking down like a corridor in some sort of underground shopping mall, and this really big, blocky robot, we're talking like... the size of it was like probably about 4 foot tall, a big sort of cube on wheels going round making beeping noises and looking like it was doing something really important, but it was, as far as I could tell, it wasn't doing anything of conceivable value, but it looked really cool and I didn't know what it was doing. I think it could have been cleaning the floors, but I don't know what it was doing, but it was really cool just watching this robot just go around in circles going beep 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 brop, 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 way better than Pepper the robot.
So, but it was like it was like a big hunk of technology.
Yeah, it was this big, really clunky looking. It looked like somebody had made a robot in the '80s kind of design. It was cool. It was cool. Yeah. I want more robots. I just want better robots. When someone combines the power of ChatGPT with an actual physical robot, we're fucked. Although it does exist already. I did see. Do you see that robot Amica? Amica. British robot that looks like the most incredible humanoid robot you'll ever see. It's designed not to look like, it doesn't have like human skin. I think it's got like this blue kind of head, but the facial expressions are truly chilling. And look it up if you get the chance. Amica, I think it's AMECCA, and they combined it with chat, and so you can have a conversation with it and chat. GPT answers through this humanoid robot. Very exciting.
How do you sort of like ChatGPT kind of interface? Because do you have to pay for ChatGPT? Like, who's like...
I have started paying for ChatGPT 4 because it is like insane and extremely powerful for doing things.
What have you used it for? Just like kind of like providing frameworks for bits and bobs sort of things. I can see stuff like, I think the most daunting thing about producing something, and certainly content-wise, like, it's the blank page. So like, if you sort of go, look, throw some fucking scenarios, throw some fucking framework on there, and then you know, you go ahead and or a creator goes ahead and sort of creates it properly. But I always think framework wise, it probably would be quite useful to have that kind of framework built before. Because I always wanted to do. I think I've spoken about with this guy before, Roland, Amstrad CPC video game mascot from back in the day, like proper 80s video games.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always wanted to do like a video on YouTube about Amstrad, Roland, the mascot, because no one's done a huge amount on him. And I thought...
I wonder why,
because it's a piece of shit, absolute piece of shit. And so I typed in, write a 2-minute script about Amstrad, you know, it can tell us all about the games of Amstrad's Roland and stuff. And it went, ba 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 ba. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I mean, that's a good framework. And then you can just sort of go, right, what do I need to look more on? And then you can sort of go and do your research and stuff. So look, it's coming, and it's coming hard, and we're all fucked. But you know, while the wave comes in and takes everyone's jobs, it's coming. I mean, so you may as well use it.
It's just incredible. Like I would take my voiceover that I just did for a Journey Across Japan episode, and I said like, make it more interesting. Hit enter. Oh. It comes back. They've got more adjectives in it. They've got some interesting metaphors that I couldn't be bothered to think up. That was pretty good. I got it to teach me quantum physics at a high school level, because quantum physics is quite difficult. I said, imagine that I'm 10, teach me quantum physics. And it did. It was like, if I have a strawberry and this strawberry is linked with another strawberry with an invisible string, and it went off and it was really easy to understand and digest. I get it to proofread stuff. Sometimes if I'm sending an email, you just whack it in and say, just check it over. Instantaneously, you get it back with spelling and grammar fixed. even if, you know, it can guess words extremely well. Translation, very effective. Right. Takes in some Japanese and just being like, what's this say in English? And they'll do it instantly. Pretty damn accurate. Like, I've checked, obviously, that it is accurate with Japanese friends, and they've always said it is. Video titles, you could be like, give me 10 video title ideas. It is insane. It's like having a personal assistant who has the knowledge of God, and you can just do anything with it and ask it anything.
But it's alarming. Once we start, but once we go down this line, we're not uploading anything that hasn't already been produced before, so then everything becomes very, you know, vanilla, because nobody's uploading anything that hasn't been done before, which is interesting. But for now, it's all right. It's a little kind of little tool to put some bones on the flesh.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I know most people still don't use it, and I'm trying to get the people I work with to use it for certain things recently. For example, we're looking at film festivals. I was talking to my colleague about researching film festivals that we should enter and using chat for that. You could be like, give me the top 10 film festivals in the world for short films, and it would just list them off. And then you could be like, give me the winners. It would give you the list of winners. And then you'd be typing, how did the winners win? What did they do? Until you come out with a framework and a strategy for just having an award-winning short film, like what you would need to do to get there, potentially. So I think it can save you a lot of time. I think it's made Google irrelevant to some extent. You do have to fact-check certain things.
Yeah.
Don't get too reliant on it just yet. Like the old Wikipedia days, when you couldn't put Wikipedia in your essay, you've still got to be a little bit careful. But from what I use it for and everything I've done with it, it's blown me away and always exceeded my expectations. And it's more knowing how to use it. Like the other day, I was like having a bad day, and I thought, I know, I'd like a conversation with Socrates. And I said, become Socrates. And it did. And it spoke like Socrates because it's read every book ever and it knows who Socrates is in immense detail. And, you know, just gave me advice. And it was like talking to Socrates. And also, I read an article the other day that some porn star or someone on OnlyFans had created a chatbot version of themselves.
That's right,
and
yeah.
For a fee, you could go on there, I think, and talk to her sort of AI version.
Yeah.
And she's making $17,000 a month doing that. So I think the world will be divided into two camps. People that use chat and AI and sort of grasp it quickly and use it in their workflow, and people that don't. And I worry that people that don't use it or adapt to it will get left behind. But the one good thing out of it is like having a godlike personal assistant, and everyone can access it, so that's cool. And you don't have to pay for it, obviously, but it's worth paying for it, I think, if you use it as much as I do, like every day for something. Enough about chat. I did see Google as well release their own one, but I did toy around with it and I wasn't impressed with it.
Right.
Like, it's got a lot of capabilities and it's got access to the internet in a way that chat doesn't. Like, annoyingly, chat has a cutoff of up until 2021. So you can ask it anything as long as it didn't happen after 2021. Yeah. But if you're listening to this and you haven't used it, I strongly urge you to try it. And I think it will save you a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I even get it to reply to emails. So, yeah.
Oh.
If you get an email.
Oh, how rude.
Yeah. I'm not talking to you, Pete, anymore. I just get chat to deal with Pete instead. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Guys, we'll be back later in the week to do all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, by the time this has come out, Journey Across Japan will finally be out. A bit late,
check it out.
But it's out. So go and enjoy it. Lots of snow, lots of ice. We'll talk about that in the next episode. But for now, have a great bloody week, a fine week indeed. Mm. And I'll see you right back here to do it all over again on the Abroad in Japan podcast with Mr. Donaldson.
See you later, you pigs. Hello, I'm Pete Donaldson, and if you're listening to this podcast, you may very well be a lover of video games. And if you are, I'd like to introduce you to VGC, a gaming podcast. From the team behind the popular gaming site Video Games Chronicle comes a gaming podcast for grown-ups. Hosted by reporters Jordan Midler, Andy Robinson, Chris Scullion and little old me, definitely not a grown-up, it's everything you need to know about games and we're bringing you it first. Give us a try. VGC, a video games podcast. Listen wherever you get your pods or head to lnk.to/VGC. That's lnk.to/VGC.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.